Dads on the air, we're here cause we care. We ask all the questions that others don't dare. We're dads on the air. We're dads on the air.
And welcome back to Dads on the Air, coming to you around Australia on the Community Radio Network. In this program, we bring you informing and entertaining conversations with a wide range of interesting people on topics of fatherhood, family and parenting, men's and boys' issues. Hi, I'm Bill Cable, and with me in the studio today is Ken Thompson.
Hello.
And our guest today is Kim Borrowdale. Kim is the Deputy CEO and Head of Communications at Suicide Prevention Australia.
Kim holds a Master's in Communications Management from Kingston University, UK, and is a senior communications specialist with experience spanning the government, development and professional services sectors and disciplines, including brand, internal communications, stakeholder management, marketing communications, digital, media PR and CSR.
And we're going to be speaking with Kim about a new report that's been issued on World Suicide Prevention Day. The report is called The Ripple Effect, Understanding the Exposure and Impact of Suicide in Australia. Kim, welcome to the program.
Hi, Bill. Thanks for having me.
Kim, World Suicide Prevention Day focuses on the high number of suicides in Australia and around the world. How many people in Australia die this way each year?
So for the past 10 years, we've seen more than 2,500 people take their own lives each year. With the latest data we have from the Australian Bureau of Statistics from 2014, telling us that 2,864 people were reported as suiciding.
An extraordinarily high figure, isn't it? And I imagine there's also some underreporting in reaching that figure.
Yeah, we do know that that in terms of the information we have, we suspect that there is underreporting, both in deaths and attempts. But there's a lot of work being done with different services and health authorities to really get the information that we need so we can have a more accurate picture of the magnitude of the problem, and which is part of the reason we did this report.
So what would be the reasons for this underreporting?
There's a number of reasons. Sometimes it's simply a matter of infrastructure. So if you look at different touch points where people might go, if there has been a suicide attempt or if there's been how deaths are reported, you're touching different health systems, emergency services, community infrastructure, and across different jurisdictions. So there's sort of data and information architecture reasons there. There could also be reasons around still stigma in the community about identifying something as a suicide or suspected suicide, but we're hoping that with increased public awareness, and we'll see a change to attitudes and behaviours around that, and see more people speaking openly about it.
I would expect there are a lot of suspicious deaths too, where people, perhaps single driver in a car and drives into a tree when the conditions are good and there's no real reason for him or her to head off the road.
Yeah, there's definitely a lot of case-by-case things are discussed with coroners and emergency services to try and unpick any situations where it may be a suspected suicide.
And in the report that we've talked about, you refer to lived experience. What about the number of people affected by these suicides?
So what we wanted to understand with this report is just how many people are impacted by suicide and suicidal behaviours. So, you know, it's not an uncommon thing for people to have suicidal thoughts, or to be caring for someone who's struggling, and or even to manage those sort of thoughts each day. So I think the fact that we want to see how many people are actually impacted by those sort of things, as well as every time there's a suicide death. Previous reporting had said something like 6 people impacted by every death, which we know just by looking at our own personal lives is a gross underestimation. And then recently there's been some research in the US that says it's more like 135 people. And look, when we say exposed and impacted, I think it's important to think, we tend to, when someone dies, we tend to look at the family and the close relationships around them. But what I found interesting in this report is the concept of perceived closeness. So, for example, a work colleague or someone who may not, we may not think after a suicide death, think to offer them the bereavement support, but they actually are heavily impacted and feel that impact for a long period of time.
So it is all around us, this experience and lived experience that we've just talked about, and yet there's a lack of awareness in the community that suicide is preventable.
Exactly. I think we definitely need to work together to smash a few of these myths around suicide and suicidal behaviour. And one of those is that, you know, suicide is mostly preventable. So we know that there's research that says putting different measures in place and early interventions and, you know, working with people before that point of crisis is reached can support them to live. We also know from our Suicide Prevention Australia has a national lived experience network, and what we've been able to do is talk to people who have survived suicide attempts and talk to them about what helped them live, what could have helped them earlier, what would they like us to know so that we can hopefully help people not reach that point where they're attempting to take their life. Which I think is just such invaluable learning, and that's a lot of the lessons that have come out of this report, is listening to people who've been there and then marrying that with the research on what we know works and trying to blend research and medical, clinical side of things with the human aspect and what feedback we've got from individuals who've survived suicide attempts.
Perhaps one of the difficulties is, because language is so important in this area, perhaps people are scared to use the wrong words. I note it's people no longer talk about committing suicide. It's preferable to refer to death by suicide. Mm. There are a number of little measures like that seem to be important.
Yes, definitely. There's a lot of language that's suggested as being more helpful than others, and committed is one of them because it has various legal, religious connotations. So what you want to think about is any of this language is not that, it's not a personal preference. It's the fact that if you use any language that is going to be a barrier to someone else seeking help, then it's preferable not to use that language. But that said, I would rather someone have the conversation and use incorrect language than not have the conversation at all. And I think that people need to, in terms of that sort of people are scared to have the conversation or scared to talk about it, I think the prospect of losing someone is a lot scarier. So I think you need to take that approach where it's unlikely you're going to make the situation worse if someone is actually thinking about suicide.
Mm, if they're caring for you. And I guess that's where you work together with people like Are You OK, which has this national campaign.
Yes. Are You OK? Day was last week, and you know they're all about not only having the conversation, but also really sort of building our personal capacity to be able to support someone if they say no, I'm not. And I think it's important to be able to have those conversations, those tough conversations. And Are You OK? Has actually been talking to us this year about having those conversations 365 days a year, so that when times are tough, it's not like you're building yourself up to one really tough conversation, because you've had the regular conversations throughout the year, and hopefully that'll build a community that's more likely to speak up when they're struggling, because they're more used to talking about how they're feeling. It doesn't have to just be at that crisis point.
And we're speaking with Kim Borrowdale, who is the Deputy CEO and Head of Communications at Suicide Prevention Australia. Kim, we're going to take a short break now. This is a song by the Four Tops, and it's called Reach Out, I'll Be There.
Until happiness is done.
that was the Four Tops telling us that if you feel that hope is gone, happiness is just an illusion, then reach out and I'll be there. And that is a message that we'll talk about in a little while. It's the message from Are You OK, which has been a very successful national movement in Australia.
And we're speaking today with Kim Borrodale, Deputy CEO and Head of Communications at Suicide Prevention Australia. Kim, World Suicide Prevention Day in 2016 had a theme. I wonder if you could tell us a little bit about that.
Sure. The theme for 2016 was Connect, Communicate and Care, which is important to think about from both an individual and a community level, and also I think goes right up into, you know, business and government as well. But essentially what it's all about is fostering connections to each other and to those close to you, because we know from research that social connectedness can reduce the risk of suicide. So basically being there for someone who feels disconnected, or thinking about how you connect with yourself and your community, can make a huge difference. And also there's the sort of education point of connecting to formal and informal support. So just having a look on our website, for example, on different resources that are available, if you should ever need them. And hopefully, you know, you won't need to need them for yourself or for others, but knowing how to get help and give help and connecting to that at the right time is really important. Communication was the second keyword for this theme, and open communication is vital if we're to reduce suicide. So we need to discuss it like any other public health issue, and we need to equip people to communicate effectively. So there's a great website called Conversations Matter, conversationsmatter.com.au, and it has some practical sentences that you can say when you get a bit tongue-tied, because I've been there as well. You know, I work in suicide prevention, but when you're actually having a tough conversation, it's easy to get tongue-tied. So there's some great tips on that website on how you can have these conversations with any group or individual. And then finally, the third word was care, which is all about, on two fronts really, the policymakers and planners, that they care about this issue, that they understand the magnitude of this issue for Australia as a public health issue, and actually put measures in place so that it remains on the agenda regardless of the political situation. And the second is more about care in sort of services and community. So working with health professionals, for example, to be able to have that care when someone comes into their environment, but also looking at what care means to us as individuals. So in your community, how do you, and in your networks, how do you show that you're caring for the people around you? And then also, how do you care for yourself? Because you are not going to be in a position to help someone else if you're not taking care of yourself and have a good understanding of what being well means to you.
I think suicide is often portrayed as being always a mental health issue. Is that your finding?
Absolutely not. We know that when people attempt to take their lives, they're understandably experiencing a high level of mental distress. But they're not always mentally ill. And so I think while we need to have a strong focus on supporting people who have diagnosed mental illnesses or who manage a mental health issue throughout their lives, we also need to recognise that there are a range of social pressures that can become too much for people and have nothing to do with mental illness. So, you know, any number of contributing factors, from relationship breakdowns to employment pressure and finances, any number of sort of stresses that build up on people can contribute to them thinking of taking their own lives. So we absolutely should not think that it's solely mental illness.
And Kim, do you have any thoughts on why there are some differences in different groups? Like, the overall position is that men probably take their own lives by suicide maybe three times as often as females, and you've got the Torres Strait Islander Aboriginal community have a very high rate. Even the building industry has a high rate. Is there a common factor there that you think causes people to take this action?
It's difficult to say. So we know from research that men seek help less than women. Men also historically use more violent means to attempt. But we released some research on women last year and found that young women were using increasingly more violent means too. So we shouldn't take our eyes off younger women and their behaviours in this as well. And then in the other groups, there's people who work in high-stress environments or high male-dominated workplaces. We see that more often. But I think there's also been a lot of success in, for example, the construction industry with Mates in Construction, looking at peer-based support. So men, they found that men are more likely to talk to their peers as opposed to talk to a health professional, whereas women, you see more, they're more likely to go to their GP, for example. But it's really hard to generalise, and what we do know is that we need to talk to those groups that are more affected to find out what works for them.
Yes, there seems to be some hope there that action could be taken in those areas where you say, you know, this may be a cause of the problem. And your new national report that was released recently, it was titled The Ripple Effect, Understanding the Exposure and Impact of Suicide in Australia. My reading of that is that the ripples, perhaps you could describe that for us as well, but they seem to be able to have a good and a bad effect.
Yeah. So first of all, I would like to say that when I think of the ripple effect in terms of the negative aspects and how the pain that suicide brings when it touches our lives, is I see them not as soft ripples. Sometimes they could be. Sometimes it could be, you know, waves of emotion that go for years and years that are extremely devastating. So in thinking of that ripple, we're thinking of the volume of people that are touched by suicide, not necessarily the depth of impact, because we know that from this research, people can feel that devastation for decades after losing someone to suicide. But what in this report, what really fascinated me and inspired me were the stories of hope and resilience that people shared as well. And it really showed me that when people have been touched by suicide, whether it's a death or caring for someone or they've been suicidal themselves, the people around them have learnt a lot about their own personal resilience. They've also been able to take on extra training or take action in the community, and that's what we term the positive ripple effect, is that actually if we all can take this on as a serious issue in Australia, if we can all educate ourselves a little more on what support's out there and we can communicate with each other and have a good look at how we take care of ourselves, then we can actually contribute to a positive ripple effect of hope and change.
We often hear about the signs that people should be watching out for when there's a potential suicide. What do you see as the signs?
It's very individual. So I would say my first learning from people in our lived experience network is that a big sign is about changes in behaviour. So, for example, if someone is usually quite gregarious and they become withdrawn, or someone who's quite quiet is suddenly the life of the party. So the sort of changes of behaviour. And look, these might be really subtle changes. So that's where I think having conversations with people every day of the year, all year round, and getting to know the pick up on the subtle changes of behaviour is quite important. But there are a range of physical and signs as well. So you may notice some people have had reduction in personal hygiene, or maybe exhibiting risky behaviour, like an increase in drugs and alcohol. You may see socially isolated. So there's a range of things that you can keep an eye out for, and there's a lot of information on our website on that, the warning signs. But I think the biggest thing is looking for a change in behaviour.
Now, you mentioned your website, and we will be putting that on our website. But if people want to contribute, it's not too late, is it, to contact you?
Absolutely. So this research report is just the start. We heard from thousands of Australians who've been touched by suicide. But if people want to get involved in sharing their stories, and they could get involved just by keeping up to date with what we do, or if they've got a particular policy point they're passionate about, then people can join our lived experience network, and we can involve them as much or as little as they'd like. But we are passionate about learning from lived experience of suicide, and we welcome more voices to that network so that we can learn as much as possible.
Some of the people that work in this area are particularly at risk, and I guess that includes yourself, Kim, but for anyone that is affected by this discussion, there are plenty of places you can go for help, and I might just list a couple of them. Lifeline, you can ring on 131114, Suicide Callback, 1300 659 467, or Men's Line, 1300 789 978, and don't forget that website of Suicide Prevention Australia. Kim, we've reached the part of the show where I'd like to ask you if you've got a song that you might like us to play.
Yes, please. That'd be lovely. But before I give you the name of my song, I'd just like to mention all of those support lines. You don't have to be suicidal to call those either. So if you're worried about someone and you're not quite sure how to handle it, call them anytime for advice and they'd be happy to talk to you as well. So my song is Beautiful Noise by Neil Diamond, if you have it.
So, Kim, why did you select that song?
I thought because I was speaking to dads on the air, I'd request my dad's favourite song, and he loves Neil Diamond.
Here is Neil Diamond. And that was Beautiful Noise by Neil Diamond, specially selected today by our guest, Kim Borrowdale, who is Deputy CEO and Head of Communications at Suicide Prevention Australia. So it just remains for me now to thank you, Kim. Thank you very much for being on the program.
Thank you so much for having me.
It's wonderful work that Suicide Prevention Australia are doing, and I'd recommend everyone to check that site. So that's it for this week. We'll be back next week with another show on Dad's on the Air.